You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Right circle Kucherov in front point. Score! There it is! 100 assists! Nikita Kucherov!
Over to Matthews! Score! No, it's Tavares who scores!
He'll finish with 69 goals.
Nice. Nice.
No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, dog. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, can you feel the energy in the building, folks? Can you feel it over your airwaves? Is it emanating through your car radio or shower radio? If so, there's a reason for it. We know officially now who the Vancouver Canucks will face in the first round of the playoffs when playoff hockey returns to Vancouver and Rogers Arena for the first time since 2015. It will be the Nashville Predators in the building, Jason. That was confirmed last night. So we have a lot to get into on the show today. Beginning at 7 o'clock, the entire first hour of this program, it's going to be all Canucks, all hockey, all playoff preview. 7 o'clock, Adnan Virk from MLB Network is going to join us. 7:30, Jim Toth from Winnipeg CJOB Radio. We booked Jim when we thought this game might matter. Tonight's game against Winnipeg, 5 o'clock from Winnipeg, doesn't matter so much for the Vancouver Canucks.
Still curious to talk to Jim about the Winnipeg Jets and their matchup against the Colorado Avalanche and what they think about that. And I want to talk about that 7-0 game where Winnipeg went into Colorado and just thrashed the Avs, and talk to Jim about what the Jets are feeling their advantage might be over the Avs, and it is Connor Hellebuyck, but also how they feel about playing a guy like Nathan MacKinnon.
8 o'clock, Thomas Drantz. The Drantzer from the Athletic Vancouver and Canucks talk right here on Sportsnet 650. As mentioned, it is the final day of the NHL's regular season. It is the final regular season game of the year for the Vancouver Canucks. It goes at 5 o'clock our time. Note the start time, 5 o'clock. Pre-game, post-game, and the actual game can be all heard right here on Sportsnet 650. Working in reverse on the guest list, 8 o'clock, it's Drantzer. 7:30, it's Jimmy Toth. From Winnipeg, and 7 o'clock, it's Adnan Virk. We got a lot to get into on the program. So without further ado, Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. So last night, the Dallas Stars needed just a single solitary point in their final game of the season against the St. Louis Blues to clinch top spot in the Western Conference. Well, the Dallas Stars did more than that. They beat the Blues 2-1 in a shootout, and that means the Vancouver Canucks finished second overall in the West, but more importantly, have now locked in a date with the Nashville Predators in the opening round of this year's playoffs. For the record, let's just get this out of the way right now. We have no idea when the series is going to begin. It has not been announced yet.
Well, we have some idea.
There are multiple reports out there that it will begin Sunday evening. If that is the case, we could have a triple header at the least, maybe a quadruple header on Sunday, because all of the Eastern Conference playoff series are going to get underway on both Saturday and Sunday, depending on what happens in the West. And we still don't know what's going to happen in the West. It goes right down to the final day. Dallas doesn't know who it is playing yet. Mm-hmm. Edmonton doesn't know who it is playing yet. It'll either be the Los Angeles Kings or the Vegas Golden Knights.
So here are the four official games that we do know. Saturday afternoon for us, a 2 o'clock start, 5 o'clock Eastern time, the Islanders and the Hurricanes.
That's the first playoff game. Starts it off, Isles, Canes, Saturday afternoon.
Right after that one, 5 o'clock our time, Maple Leafs versus Bruins. That's at TD Garden in Boston. And then don't party too much on Saturday morning because you got to wake up early, 9:30 a.m.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I had to.
I know. 9:30 a.m. It's a 12:30 game in Florida.
Okay.
Between the Panthers and the Lightning. And after that one, so this is going to be a noon start for us, the Rangers and the Capitals. Now, there's probably going to be more hockey on that Sunday and possibly the Vancouver Canucks versus the Nashville Predators. The start time, we'll have to wait and see. We'll see if there's a game before that Canucks game that could kick it back to like a regular start time at 7. Sure. But we've also seen a lot of Canucks games in the playoffs. A lot of the times the start time is 5 o'clock our time. But I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it is. In some ways, they might not even know. The reports going out there were that originally it was going to start on Tuesday. And then both the Canucks and the Preds were like, that seems like a long break.
Yeah.
It seems like we're going to have to play a lot of games in not many days if you do that. So let's get this thing started on Sunday.
I especially understood the complaints from the Nashville side of things because they've been done already. Their season's been over, it feels like, for a while now already, right? They were done earlier in the week. They would have been off for, I think, if it would have started on Tuesday, they would have been off for 8 days, which is an awfully long break for them. Speaking of the Nashville Predators, if you're wondering about the season series, the Vancouver Canucks handled the Nashville Predators this season. In 3 games this year, the Canucks swept. They outscored the Predators 13-6. Now, here's the thing. The Predators were a very different team post-All-Star break as they were pre-All-Star break. As a matter of fact, the storyline and the narrative of this entire Nashville Predators season really came down in mid-February when after a 9-2 loss to the Dallas Stars, a game in which they were embarrassed on home ice, the general manager, Barry Trotz, and the head coach, Andrew Brunette, they ripped away a treat from their players. The Predators were supposed to go to Vegas. They were supposed to go to Vegas a couple days early ahead of their game and go to see U2 at the Sphere. You know, they were playing at the Sphere there for a while, about a month-long, what's it called, a residency that they had?
Yeah.
Anyway, the Preds were supposed to go. The Preds got it ripped away, and then they went on an 18-game point streak, which basically catapulted them from being a team on the outside of the playoffs and maybe a seller to a team that was fully in playoff contention. And they didn't just kind of pick up a point here and there and go like 9 wins and, you know, 9 overtime losses in the shootout. They had 15 wins in 18 games. So that was the story of their season right there.
They also beat quite a few cupcakes in that along that stretch.
Yeah, but
a lot of San Jose, Anaheim, Ottawa, Montreal, Buffalo.
I was just trying to put it into context. That ended up being the real defining.
No.
It was a 6-week stretch.
It was a very impressive stretch, for sure.
But impressive or no, the point I was trying to make was that they were really a rudderless team, a team without direction. No one was really sure what they were going to be. And then a galvanizing 6-week period, and they're on their way to the playoffs.
Isn't it fair to say that before the U2 incident, they were the team that most of us expected them to be this season, and that's not a terrible team, but not a great team either.
If you will.
You know, Barry Trotz took over as the general manager, and he knew that he had some work to do. So he ships out guys like Ryan Johansson, and who else was there?
Matt Duchene.
And, you know, when he did that, it didn't sound like those guys were the best culture guys for that organization, because who does he go out and get? He goes out and gets Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Shen. And those guys, while good players, you know, they're getting a little bit older. And in the narrative out there, whether it was true or not, where those guys were more signed to set the culture for what was going to be a retool, rebuild, a youth injection on that team. Yes, they had some good players like Roman Josi and UC Saros and Philip Forsberg, but this was going to take more than those guys, and they basically had to bring in some placeholders just so the team didn't completely bottom out and completely – and not lose its culture, because I think it had lost its culture. I think that's what Barry Trotz was saying. Like, this team, you know, when I was here, it had a culture, and even when I left, it had a culture, and it very much lost its culture. So those guys were almost like placeholders, like, come in, we're going to pay you quite a bit of money. Like, Luke Shen got a nice deal for him. But just take care of this organization, because there's going to be some bumpy things that go along the way.
Now, that's exactly what happened. But here's the interesting thing that happened along the way. The placeholders all ended up having unbelievable seasons for them. So at age 34, and we will have to get to know Gustav Nyquist pretty well over the next week or 10 days, because at 34, crazy, Gustav Nyquist just had the best offensive campaign of his 13-year NHL career.
I remember when he was going to take over for Zetterberg in Detroit, and Thomas Tatar was going to take Datsyuk's spot.
So it finally happened, because he at 34 and with an entirely different organization, Gustav Nyquist is finally hit those heights. 23 goals and 75 points is a hell of a year for a guy that, when they signed him in free agency, it didn't register a blip. Everyone was talking about they got O'Reilly and Shen, mm-hmm, and then also Gustav Nyquist. And also, speaking of O'Reilly, he is the only Nashville Predators player on the active roster to have faced the Vancouver Canucks in a playoff series. He, of course, quite famously, you'll remember, played against the Canucks in the bubble when he was a member of the St. Louis Blues, mm-hmm, and he was a handful. Ryan O'Reilly had a really good year. He turned 33 in February and scored, wait for it, 69 points this year.
Nice.
Now, that is the second highest total of his career. So just think about this for a sec. Two of their older, on the wrong side of 30, free agent signings that they kind of brought in as, like you said, placeholders and guys to establish the culture, ended up having two of the best offensive campaigns of their careers. Like, they way exceeded expectations. On that note, another guy on the wrong side of 30 who had the best offensive year of his career, Philip Forsberg. 48 goals this season for the Nashville Predators. That is the most in a single season of any Predators player in franchise history. So as I was doing the research and going through this team, it is fair to say that there is a little bit of overachieving here. And I think that they maybe swung out of their shoes a little bit, because you can't tell me that three guys who are on the wrong side of 30, and not necessarily in the back half of their career, but kind of, all managed to have some of the best offensive numbers of their career. Now, a lot of the credit has to go to Andrew Brunette and the style of play that he implemented. The Preds got some pretty good offensive performances from these guys, built on the strength of their blue line with Roman Josi and Ryan McDonagh. They've got one of the best pairings in the National Hockey League. I haven't mentioned UC Saros yet. I think it goes without saying that Saros is a pretty talented guy. Heavy workload this year.
Nobody stopped more pucks than UC Saros.
Heavy, heavy workload this year. Like, he could have used the Thatcher Demko, I need a break over the final month. Yes, I know it was a knee injury. Okay.
Yeah.
But Saros was carrying
a huge
load this
year. Are we doing structure too?
Anything? Like, he faced a lot of shots in a lot of games this year.
So
I don't
that
know.
Advantage Canucks then?
Okay, yeah. Here I was just going to bring that up. Okay, tell me if you agree with this.
Yes, go.
The blue line of both teams has one really impressive pairing in Ryan McDonagh, Roman Josi, and for Nashville, and Quinn Hughes and Philip Peronik for Vancouver. The bottom four, so we say, for both those teams should be a slight Vancouver advantage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Preds have Jeremy Lauzon, who hits a lot.
NHL Dante hits leader.
Dante Fabro, Spencer Stastny, who I don't know much about at
Not
all.
Not related to any of the other Stastnys.
And Luke Shen. This is the last defense. I don't know if there's any injuries or anything, but this is what Daily Faceoff has. And then the Canucks have those, you know, that group of veterans that are making a good amount of money and have been lauded for, you know, the the size and the strength and the length and the fact that the Canucks have been pretty good defensively this season with, you know, Tyler Myers and Carson Soucy and Nikita Zadorov and Ian Cole and maybe if Noah Juulsen gets into the lineup. I think on the defense, you would maybe give a slight advantage to the Canucks, although Roman Josi and Ryan McDonagh is a heck of a pairing.
They're actually kind of similar in terms of roster construction. Mm-hmm. Is the top pair is very top heavy.
Right.
They didn't try and balance it out like putting McDonagh and Josi to have their own pairs, which is what we thought the Canucks would do with Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek at the beginning of the year. Then they played them together and they're like, nope, this will work. I think that you're right in your assessment. The Canucks have just, it's just a better bottom four, and we're using that term, mm-hmm. bottom four group. I don't think it's a huge advantage, but I definitely would give the nod to Vancouver.
Goaltending, should we just say it's pretty much a coin toss at this point? Maybe there's a slight advantage to Laddie. Who would you give it to? Because the only reason I might give it to Nashville is that you don't know what the rust factor is going to be like on Demko, and he's just coming off an injury.
Yeah, that's definitely a factor, but I just think the the environment is going to be easier for Demko,
yeah.
So I think maybe he has the slight advantage. Saros might play out of his mind, which is definitely possible.
Yeah.
But
let's try to take
bets here. I would say Demko is
okay,
the favorite.
But you could also say it's a coin toss. It's yeah. like two elite goalies.
Well, Saros was my number one goalie coming yeah. into this year, and he just had a slight down year, but he was still
right.
tops of the league in a lot of categories.
Hold on a sec. Okay. Now, my whole point is like the Canucks forwards need to be the best group here if the Canucks are going to beat the Nashville Predators, which I think they should. If I'm making picks, I have no problem taking the Vancouver Canucks to win the series. If you look at the Nashville forward lines, yes, they do have some good players. Philip Forsberg, I mean, there's nobody on the Canucks that has scored as many goals as he has this season. Got 48 goals. Very impressive season from him. You mentioned, you know, Gustav Nyquist and Ryan O'Reilly. But if I'm looking at this roster that's Nashville's, and then I'm looking at Vancouver's, where you've got, you know, you've got the JT Miller line with Brock Besser. You've got Elias Pettersson, who in theory, you know, he's being paid like one of the best players in the game. I hope he plays like that. Mm-hmm. And then you've got that third line with Elias Lindholm, who they go out and, you know, spend pretty good assets to get. And now he's going to go into the playoffs with Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland. Maybe I'm underselling some of the Preds because obviously there's some guys down the lineup that have done a pretty good job. But, you know, Anthony Beauvillier is on their third line. You know, they've got. I guess less name players than the Vancouver Canucks. I just think that if you're looking at the Canucks forward group and the Nashville forward group, if the Nashville forward group outplays the Vancouver Canucks forward group, I think that would be a very big disappointment for the Canucks.
I mean, the biggest thing that you have to look at with the difference in teams is going to be the depth at center and the quality and depth of scoring at forward. Like, you got to understand that the Nashville Predators' third leading goal scorer this year was Roman Josi. And they had four 20-goal scorers, and Josi was one of them. And to make it even more skewed, the three other goal scorers that led this team, not named Roman Josi, all played on the same line together, right? It was Forsberg, O'Reilly, and Nyquist. That's kind of, they drove the team this year. O'Reilly later called it like his two Swedish meatballs, his line mates, right? That was a clever little thing that they had going on in Nashville for the year.
Canucks have way more weapons. Like if they're on
not their, way more.
If they're on their if they're playing at, yeah,
I think there's a, they got a
way
significant
more
number of more offensive.
Yeah,
weapons.
If they're playing at 100%, they should be able to beat them in 5 or 6. Like if they have all their top three lines scoring, like they, I mean, that's what it'll take though. They, mm-hmm. all three lines, those first three lines.
Yeah, Eno's not saying it's going to happen. He's just saying like it.
They have to be doing that to win. Like, Nashville's a good team.
Here's the thing.
But if they do that, then it's 5 or 6 games, I bet.
They got third line, bottom, like, depth scoring contributions from guys like Novak and Evangelista, not unlike what the Canucks got from, like, Garland and Joshua, just in terms of straight production.
Mm-hmm.
Guys that were flirting with 20 goals. So I think it's partly that we're looking at those names and we're not all that familiar with them. And I think a lot of people in Nashville right now are probably doing the same with like Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland. Like, I just think that that's a natural reaction.
Can we talk about the coaching matchup for just a second too? Because sure. Andrew Brunette, the head coach in Nashville, of course, had some success coaching the Florida Panthers in the regular season. And he's going to be looking to shake off that reputation that his system or whatever works in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, you've got Rick Tocchet. And this is the best team that Rick Tocchet has ever been a head coach in. Did he win a series with Arizona in some form?
Well,
maybe in the bubble?
Yeah.
Was he? Yeah. At any rate, this is easily his biggest challenge as a head coach. He's probably going to be the coach of the year in the NHL. But when we talk to our Nashville guests tomorrow, I'll be curious to talk about Andrew Brunette. And just ask, like, does he have a bit of a chip on his shoulder? Because, you know, everyone thought he did a terrific job with Florida and they played a very exciting brand of hockey. But then some people wondered, is this a little too loosey-goosey for the playoffs? And then it kind of turned out to be.
Well, I'm glad, you know, when you mentioned Rick Tocchet and you asked, I was going to jump in right away, but I let you finish. But he did, in fact, win a playoff series, Jason. Do you know who he won that playoff series against?
You tell me.
The Nashville Predators.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, him and Connor Garland back in 2020. They beat the Arizona Coyotes beat the Nashville
Predators.
Canucks
have the coaching advantage, too. Across the board, advantage, 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 advantage.
Garland is one of, I believe it's four Canucks that have actually played the Nashville Predators in a playoff series. The other ones are Zadorov. He did it back in 2018 when he was a member of the Colorado Avalanche. Tyler Myers, who you'll remember way back when, Winnipeg played Nashville in a pretty famous, it was a good series, second round series way back in 2018. Ian Cole beat the Nashville Predators in the 2017 Stanley Cup final with Pittsburgh. And then, as I mentioned, Connor Garland is a member of the Arizona Coyotes.
Okay, but you guys, who's your pick and how many games? What do you say?
I think the Canucks are going to win it, maybe six.
I think it's going to go seven. I think the Canucks will win. I think Nashville is going to be more difficult than you, in particular, A-Dog.
I'm not writing them off.
You just said the Canucks are probably going to win in five.
I said if they're firing on all cylinders, they'll win in five or six, but that's not guaranteed to happen.
I think that if you look at – here's the thing.
I'm not saying Nashville's not good. They are good.
I looked, and they don't really have any big deficiencies. There's nothing that is glaring where you're like, that's something that could be exposed.
Neither do the Canucks, though.
Exactly. That's why I think it'll be a close series. Like, it's not going to be a cakewalk here. I mean, they got in – to the playoffs. I know that they got on a heater and that really propelled them in.
The Canucks got to stay out of the box, right? Like, the Preds don't have a crazy power play, but stay out of the box and don't let Philip Forsberg into situations where he can beat you.
They're just kind of good at everything, is the thing. Like, they were 14th in the NHL in goals allowed, which is, you know, not terrific, but it's within the realm of the playoff contenders, right? You're top 16, you're a playoff team. They're top 10 in scoring. They've got a relatively decent special teams. Like, they've got good goaltending, although the numbers on Saros this year weren't great. He finished with a 906, and I don't know
how... Rough start, and he...
I guess that's it, right? That was actually part of the...
Isn't that the story of the team, though? In some ways, looking at their overall stats might be a little misleading because it's been a tale of two different teams,
which is
for the Nashville Predators. Although, if you were to just take their stats after the U2 incident, that might be a case of like, well, yeah, they had a good run, but they're not as good as this run.
So yeah, that's why I keep bringing up what happened post All-Star break, because this team really was fundamentally in terms of record and statistics and performance, a very different team post All-Star. Like, if you go back to when the streak began, so around early mid Feb when they lost 9-2 to Dallas, they were tied for 10th. In the Western Conference. They were right down there with the Seattle Kraken in terms of teams that were outside the playoff picture, not by a considerable margin, but had to jump a few teams to get into the top eight.
So one of the things you might hear Thomas Durant talking about is the Nashville Predators and their ability to create scoring chances at 5-on-5. So if you're an analytics person and you want to be worried about anything that the Nashville Predators do. And Drance has said this on the show. He's like, I don't know how they do it, but the numbers bear out that they create a lot of scoring chances at 5-on-5. And here's a stat that you may or may not care about. Expected goals for per 60 at 5-on-5. The Edmonton Oilers are first. Carolina is second. Nashville is third. And the Vancouver Canucks are all the way down kind of in the middle of the pack. And we've heard a lot about the Vancouver Canucks. I think one of their challenges, especially later in the season, was creating offense at 5-on-5. Creating offense at any point, actually, for a while there because the power play wasn't going. But I think that's an Andrew Brunette staple. Like, analytically, when he was coaching the Florida Panthers, I think there were pretty similar numbers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is it a style that they're playing that is going to be conducive to success in the playoffs? And a lot of the times we see these coaches that come in here, Bruce Boudreau, there are regular season coaches, and then there are playoff coaches. And Andrew Brunette, I'm sure, doesn't want to get the reputation that he's just a regular season coach.
Sure.
So I'm sure he'll be motivated to, I don't know if he changes his style, but, you know, I think that'll be an interesting storyline. Let's just put it that way.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
What we just have to call Thomas Drance erotica. Thomas Drance erotica.
Expected goals.
Thomas Drance erotica.
Dog model.
Thomas Drance erotica.
Regression.
Thomas Drance erotica.
PDO.
Thomas Drance erotica.
8:03 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. It is What We Learn time. Hour three is brought to you by, or it's not What We Learn time, it's Thomas Drance time. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. I said it was What We Learn time because someone is insisting in the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket that the series is going to start on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, friend, while that may be true, we can't say with 100% certainty that the series is starting on Sunday. 100% certainty.
Until it's announced.
Until it's announced by the NHL.
But the sports bar at right. Rogers Arena has apparently sent out an email saying, it's Sunday.
And so I love your zest for life and the playoffs, and I do not question that you received an email. But while we are not beacons of proper journalism, even Brough and I know that dude who said he got an email from a bar is not a proper source. We can't go 100%.
We'd love it to be.
I'd love it to be.
We'd love all the news in the world to be.
A lot of reports.
Come from the bar, and then we would just set
source,
up.
Source, trust me, bro.
Set up at the bar and be like, we're going to get some news here. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, that's what you're waiting for. To the phone lines we go. Thomas Drance joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Drancer?
Well, gentlemen, I'm excited about Sunday.
100% going to happen. Drancer, where is the Canucks' advantage over the Nashville Predators? And if there is one, where is Nashville's advantage over the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty fascinating stylistic clash. I mean, we know that Vancouver crushed the Predators, frankly, in their three head-to-heads. This season, but Nashville's kind of become a different team over the course of the year. And this isn't super uncommon with clubs that have a new head coach, right? I mean, the second half of the year, it seemed like they unlocked stylistically how to win. And the way they win is by generating just a mass volume of scoring chances. And honestly, they're pretty good defensively too. I mean, they're not the Canucks, which is, I guess, where you start with where the Canucks have an advantage. It's just sort of defense. Like, defensively, the Canucks limit scoring chances at a higher level than the Predators do. The Predators play a higher event game. So shutdown hockey right there, that's Vancouver's biggest edge, I think, in the series. But, you know, beyond that, I think they have the edge on special teams. I mean, the Predators are worse on the PK than Vancouver. I think that's the only Western Conference playoff team that description applies to. So, you know, Vancouver's narrowly better on the power play. They're pretty similar in terms of their special teams sort of, like, they're narrowly better on the power play. They're narrowly better on the PK. So you'd add special teams to the mix is something that's an edge for the Canucks. I'd probably add goaltending. Saros is incredible. I mean, we are talking about one of the five best, the five most consistent, the five most durable goaltenders in hockey. Like, he's a legit workhorse starter, but, you know, Demko is going to be rested here. And you know, has been better on balance this season, and not by a slim margin, like by a fair bit. You know, there's also the height thing with Saros. Obviously he's overcome that, but the Canucks are a team of one shot scorers. There's a lot of one shot scoring talent on this Canucks roster. And that can be an issue. That can be an issue for a smaller goaltender, no matter how good they are, no matter how well adapted they are to you know, overcoming that at the NHL level. It's one thing to overcome that at the NHL level over 82 games. It's another in a 7-game series where you're facing Miller and Pettersson and company on an every game basis. So that would be the other place. Now, that's a lot of edges for the Canucks, right? Because I'd add this one too. You know, I think you'd take Vancouver's elite talent, the high-end talent, over Nashville, although maybe not by as much of an edge as it looks on paper, just given that Yossi is, you know, going to be number two on a lot of Norris ballots and deserves to be, given the fact that Philip Forsberg's going to be, you know, pretty much a cinch to be second team all NHL, right? I mean, Vancouver has a greater depth of star talent or superstar talent, but, you know, Nashville's not without, some, I don't know, twinkles in the sky of its own. But the main edge that the Predators have here, I think, is stylistic. So, you know, if you look at how the Predators play, right, they generate scoring chances at a totally different rate than the Canucks do. And in fact, you know, a pretty much top three team, top five team in the NHL in terms of how they generate scoring chances, even though they don't have, you know, a McDavid, Matthews, McKinnon guy, mm-hmm. like most of the other top offenses in the league, they are a team that generates just a wild amount of zone time.
And, so how do they do it, Drantz?
Yeah, you know, the X's and O's of it is difficult for me to pinpoint. But about midway through the season, they started to generate scoring chances like just about nobody other than the Colorado Avalanche. And here's the one thing that they do really well defensively too. I mean, they do a lot defensively really well, but one of the main things is they limit zone time. Like they are very hard to stack heavy shifts up against relative to everyone else in the league. Like they're the second best team in the NHL at denying zone time. And while Vancouver doesn't generate a ton of scoring chances, they do generate, like the Canucks do generate a ton of zone time, right? Like they're fourth in the league in sort of offensive zone time, even though that doesn't show up in the rate at which they generate chances, mm-hmm. right? They play it pretty conservatively. They try to limit what you generate off the rush, in part by holding the puck like Vancouver does, by holding the puck in the offensive end. You know, and you see those long shifts, especially with Hughes and Hronek on the ice, where Canucks forwards start to change. And Vancouver's pretty dangerous in those moments, right? The Predators just are really tough to get those types of shifts against and are really good at attacking off the rush. So because that's definitely a big part of it. I mean, this is a pretty aggressive rush team. So, you know, I know there's an old adage out there across sports, right? A good defense beats a good offense. And you need both. Like, you need both. This is no longer the, you know, win 2-1 in the playoffs NHL, although we will see some playoff games like that, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. This is a higher scoring league. This is a league where two guys just had 100 assists and one guy almost scored 70 goals. And, you know, there's like 40 guys in the league that would have won the Art Ross Trophy in 2014. So, you know, the Predators' ability to generate does mean that they tend not to be out of games. And Vancouver's really good when they get the lead. Vancouver's, you know, expert at sort of choking the oxygen out of games, especially when they're leading. But doing that against this Predators team, like the thing that Vancouver's best at, frankly, get the early lead, kill the game. You know, that's a huge challenge against this Predators team. I think they're going to have to be conscious of sort of building on those leads throughout this series.
So, Dranter, I know what the analytics say. I even referenced them earlier in the show when I just brought up the expected goals for per 60 at 5-on-5, and I think the Preds are only behind Edmonton and Carolina in that category. Having said that, if you're looking at the Preds' lines and then you're looking at the Canucks' lines, let's say that Rick Tocchet in games 1 and 2, when he's got last change, puts the Lindholm line with Garland and Joshua out against Ryan O'Reilly, Gustav Nyquist, and Philip Forsberg. Does that, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, I'd love to get your thoughts on what will happen, but to me, there should be some matchups that the Pettersson line should win and the JT Miller line should win when you're going up against the Preds. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, no, I do agree. I don't look at it as a given, though, that that's a matchup that the Predators, like, the Lindholm line's going to have to be at a really high level to make that an edge stick. Like, I think playing the Lindholm line against Ryan O'Reilly, Forsberg, and Nyquist is something of a risk. Because there is a chance for sure, in my view, that is a matchup that would favor Nashville to an extent that you could get chased from it, right?
But even if you lose it slightly, then you should be able to make up for it with Miller and Pettersson.
You can lose it significantly, but you can lose it significantly territorially, so long as it doesn't burn you on the scoreboard, right? The way Nashville generates chances, though, that makes me a little nervous. And, you know, we know what Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland can do together. We've seen it all year. But, you know, as good as it's been to see Lindholm look more impactful since his return from injury and since that line was united, you know, to this point, I don't think we should look at that line and give it the same level of or have the same level of confidence in its ability to drive play that we did when Bluger was in the middle of that line and they were playing earlier in the year. You know, like to this point across three games, it's not like we're seeing the same level of just like ice tilting dominance that we saw from the Canucks third line when it sort of carried this team for a stretch, frankly, from like late November through the first couple weeks of January, like until that New York trip when they put Lotto together. So, you know, for me anyway, there's certainly a possible advantage to be mined there, but you're asking a lot of the third line in that equation. And then also I think you're counting on, you know, you're counting on like that Colton Sissons checking line, which, yeah, look, it's got Mark Jankowski in it. So I get it. You're looking at it on paper and being like, that's a feast for the Pettersson line. Right. But it's like, okay, that's a feast for the Pettersson line territorially, or you're also going to expect that line with Ilya Mikheyev to do damage offensively against Saros, and then you're looking at, you know, JT Miller, Brock Besser against that Novak Evangelista line. And again, I know those are relatively anonymous names, but those are also guys who can do damage. Mm-hmm. And then you do have a Nashville defense, like a defense core, where there's going to be an awful lot of size, an awful lot of experience, you know, and a player in Josi who, yes, he gets his headlines for the way that he attacks off the rush. But, I mean, there's like a little bit of Chris Tanev there in terms of how he blocks shots, how he can suffocate things. So, I mean, the edges are obvious and they are in Vancouver's favor, but I don't look at them as being as overwhelming as it seems, right? Like if you look at daily faceoff and look through those top three lines, you're like, man, there's a bunch of guys there that wouldn't crack Vancouver's top nine. Certainly at least three guys, but that's sort of not what matters, right? It's going to be more about the style, and it's going to be more about whether or not the gamble that you're talking about, whether the third line, whether that Lindholm line can really hold against, you know, a Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist trio that's been among the NHL's best at outscoring opponents 5-on-5 since it was put together.
We're speaking to Thomas Drantz from the Athletic Vancouver and Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I was listening to Chris Mason. He was on with Sat and Dan on the pregame show yesterday as they did a little Preds look ahead. And he was talking about the one big stylistic change that Andrew Burnett did over John Hines. And that was, especially with guys like Josi, who almost was like a one-man zone entry. Like he was so good at carrying the puck in and he was good at getting it in. But the speed in which they would enter the zone was what Brunette wanted to change. So instead of Josi skating, it quickly became Josi, you're going to be the quick up man, quick pass. We're going to get this thing going. The Preds have seen their goals per game jump. They're at 3.18 this year, up from 2.72. So the proof is in the pudding a little bit there. To me, it's almost like instead of the matchup stuff, I do wonder if that's going to be the key. If the Canucks can figure out the transition game that the Preds have kind of reinvented this year, that might be the key to unlocking the entire series.
Well, that's I mean, that's how the Canucks win, right? Like they, when they get the early lead and then they still forecheck deep, right? Like this isn't a team that sits back, but what they do in Edmonton, that Edmonton game was like a perfect template for it, right? You get the early lead off the Sam Lafferty goal. And then they're not playing Kings hockey. They're coming at you still with their forwards. And you know, obviously they're not like upset if they're able to force a turnover down low with their forecheckers. But the primary function of the forecheck is to herd you into this neutral zone wedge with, you know, the one forward who's back and usually some significant back pressure coming at you too. And the size of Vancouver's defense is pretty capable of playing aggressively. Like they're literally looking to squeeze you in the neutral zone. And then counterattack really quickly, right? Like that's right back into the other end of the rink where they want look to generate zone time more than they look to generate scoring chances. And that's just incredibly frustrating. And we saw it wear down the Oilers. That said, if you are able to connect passes, and that's so much easier said than done, but it's like if you're able to make five consecutive skill plays, you can bust the wedge. And if you do, there are rush chances to be had against the Canucks. Like we've seen, I thought the Winnipeg game was a good template of it, right? Where it was like Winnipeg was, the Canucks played really well in that. I'm talking about the 4-2 loss to Winnipeg, where Winnipeg played really well throughout the game, but then eventually they solved the wedge and just like punished it twice consecutively.
They got through all those border collies out there hurting everyone into. But border collies have a lot of energy, right?
Yeah, they do. Well, and the Canucks, this is one of the reasons I think they've played so well all season, right? Like I think there's a real script. I think they know how to win. I think they're confident in those moments. So, you know, if they score first, I think we know what it looks like. And with, you know, between Josi, between Carrier, between the way that this team can move the puck and attack off the rush, again, I think they're the second half identity that the Predators have found is like an absolutely fascinating matchup for the way that Vancouver tries to win games for me. Because this is a team that's built to pass through. This is a team that's built to break out as a group and find sort of some of those chances. You know, again, it's a tough way to live. I'm sure the Predators would rather be leading in some of those games, but you know, this is one of those instances where it kind of feels like both teams' strengths are in almost perfect contrast to the other. And so it's going to be decided effectively by which team does the thing they're best at better than the other team does the thing they're best at, which happens to be the thing that attacks what the other team is best at. So, I mean, that's going to be a ton of fun. Like, bring it on. Let's get to Sunday. Let's fast forward through game 82 here.
Drancer, I have a two-part question here. What did you think? You were talking about passing plays, and what did you think of that passing play that the Pedersen line put together the other night, which ended with Hoglander scoring yet another goal? I believe the passing went Mikheyev to Petey to start the breakout. Petey back to Mikheyev through the neutral zone, with Mikheyev hitting the opposition line with speed. Mikheyev gets his head up, cross ice pass to Petey, and then Petey really calmly, and he uses that deceptiveness that we haven't really seen enough of, to slide that pass across to Hoglander to finish it off. Was that a good sign for the Canucks heading into the playoffs?
It was, because the pass Mikheyev makes to hit Pedersen, the sort of like stop up cross seam, use your speed to build the space, and then it's a pinpoint pass to Petey. I hope that'll help build his confidence and provide that line with sort of a template of how they can score. Because the Canucks, to me, you know, I don't want to say like they feel a top six forward short, but they kind of do, right? There's games, moments in games. There's certainly been moments as their offense has cooled massively since the All-Star break where, you know, that it's felt like that on occasion, especially when Mikheyev's been on Pedersen's wing. So, you know, I hope that it serves as something of like a playbook for how Mikheyev can support that line offensively with his speed, for the skill plays that he can make, that we've seen him make in a Canucks uniform, even if we haven't seen them as frequently the last 4 months. So, but I wouldn't take anything else that we saw from that game, which was like the least Canucks-y game we've seen all season, as instructive of anything, right? Like the Canucks were like trading chances, which this Canucks team doesn't do. And the Canucks were trading chances, and Rick Tocchet was joking about a post game, which Rick Tocchet doesn't do. So
I have a follow up question that I need to get to. How much pushback did you get in the comments section of The Athletic when you released your report cards and gave Elias Pettersson an A?
A little bit, but I mean, I don't know what else. I don't know how else to do it once you actually like look at it. Once you actually look at the data, once you really like sort of peer into it, it didn't feel like an A season at times, for sure. Although, you know, I think that means that we're forgetting all the times that it really, really did, like the week that they put Lotto together, or the first 2 months of the year, right? There were definitely moments where it felt like Pedersen went nuke for weeks at a time. But there were also weeks at a time where it felt like it was quiet around him. And then, you know, when you get to looking at it and you're like, okay, you know, every all-in-one metric, whether it's net rating, whether it's, you know, goals above replacement, whatever, all have him among top 10 forwards in the NHL. He was literally outscored by six NHL centermen, or at least at the time we wrote it. So I checked this yesterday, but the, you know, only Crosby, Dreisaitl, Miller, McDavid, Matthews, MacKinnon outscored him among NHL centermen. He was tied with Point Naho. Point probably passed him given how many goals the Lightning scored yesterday. But, you know, in any event, top 10 among centermen, and really only six guys clearly ahead of him while the games truly mattered. I think the frustration comes from that we got a floor season from Pedersen, and we've seen what ceiling seasons look like from Pedersen. You know what I mean? And so I think there was
That's why I don't think he deserved an A. I think he was at his floor.
Well, sure, but if your floor is still one of the 10 most valuable forwards in the league and 90 points over 82 games,
well, you're gonna put yourself into a corner here. What if he has a ceiling season? What are you gonna give him, an A plus 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 plus?
I just give him an A plus. I mean, we left some room to upgrade the award. But like, given all of that, and then the team's success and the fact that he massively improved in the faceoff circle and put in one of his best defensive seasons that we've seen, right? Like, mm-hmm. in terms of his defensive level, it went up. I don't know. I mean, 90 points in that, it feels like a lot of the hand-wringing just, like, doesn't really make sense. So partly, too, we wanted to be an antidote to that because, you know, I know how it's felt, and yet Pettersson's value remains sort of beyond question. I think it's worth reminding people of that, especially your listeners, bruh.
Well, we'll see. I with that grade, I just hope Petey gets into the school that he wants. I know he's got his sights set on Ivy League. I don't know. I know he's not going to get a reference letter from me though. So
how are your
we'll
extra
see.
Elias? How are your extracurriculars this year?
Drancer, thanks, buddy.
Anytime.
Have
cheers,
a good one.
Boys.
See you, buddy. That's Thomas Trance from the Athletic Vancouver and Canucks talk here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.